With rental housing being such a contentious topic in San Francisco, we thought it could be helpful to talk with the person who might know more about rent laws than anybody else in the city.
I'm Delene Wolf. I'm the executive director of the San Francisco Rent Board.
Wolf oversees a staff of 30 people who find themselves at the center of the city's housing debate. KALW's Ben Trefney went to their offices and asked her about what she deals with on a daily basis.
Nobody who walks into this office is happy to be here. Everybody. That's why when I go out in the city and county of San Francisco, I say I cocktail. Basically, everybody who comes in is having a landlord-tenant problem of some sort, or they just need information, or they're thinking about buying a property and they want to know how onerous it's going to be to have to deal with us. But most people who come in, especially right now, since as you're quite well aware, we're having quite the affordability crisis, so a lot of people who walk in the front door are desperate. They're losing their housing or they're afraid of losing their housing, and they want help, and we can't get people replacement housing. We raise the rent, we lower the rent, we take a look if somebody's being wrongfully evicted, because in San Francisco, the only way landlords can raise the rent to market is if they have a vacant unit, so there is kind of a built-in incentive for eviction.
You're in an interesting position where you end up hearing from both sides, landlords and tenants. I think that, well, what's your perspective on rent control from that position?
My perspective, and remember, I'm not the policymaker, I'm just the bureaucrat, but I've been here a very, very long time. I always say I have no marketable skills. All I know is rent control, but I do firmly believe, and economists may differ with me, and I know my landlord community will differ with me, but I honestly believe that this law is a necessary evil in some ways. I firmly believe that the mission would not be the mission. Chinatown would not be Chinatown. My little old ladies at Stonestown wouldn't be able to afford to still be there. And if you don't care about low-income people, you should care about our number one industry, which is tourism. And people don't come to San Francisco like they would go to the San Fernando Valley. If we don't have diversity and we're not an interesting, vibrant place, plus we need someplace for service workers who, you know, are keep the tourist industry moving. There has to be some place for them to live. Commuting from Antioch is not really viable for low-income people, although tons of them are doing it.
Do you know if there are many pushes? I'm sure that there's different lobbying groups. Are like landlord rights groups or you know, people who have great financial interest in the idea of limiting or ending rent control, have there been efforts in the city in the last 20 years to end it because people want to capitalize more on the hot market?
Nobody is going to end rent control in San Francisco. There's a 70% tenant population. Our Board of Supervisors currently is more moderate than it's been in a while. And even the moderates on the Board of Supervisors espouse that they believe in rent control. You'll never get reelected in San Francisco if you don't at least believe in a baseline or support a baseline rent control. Certain modifications, perhaps. On a statewide level, it's very interesting because the state legislature is much more conservative about rent control issues, even though there's a supposed Democratic majority. So while you can't do a lot of sweeping pro-tenant changes in Sacramento, there have been statewide initiatives on the ballot to get rid of rent control and say that local jurisdictions cannot have rent control. And somewhat surprisingly, they overwhelmingly failed. Even people in jurisdictions that don't have rent control seem to believe in local control as to that issue. And if San Francisco and Berkeley and Santa Monica think that's necessary for them, then we're not going to second guess it. Perhaps they're afraid that in their municipalities, if things got out of control, they might want the option of instituting it themselves. I don't know.
That's Delene Wolf. She's the executive director of the San Francisco Rent Board. Let's talk about a couple of scenarios then of people who might come in here. How about somebody comes in and they've lost their job, so they're having trouble meeting their rent. What can you tell them?
We can tell them if you can't pay your rent, your landlord has a right to evict you, and then we explain the process, and we tell them we make referrals to places where they can help them answer the unlawful detainer, and we give them a reality check, because I think people have this myth that, oh, you can stay and not pay your rent for months and months in San Francisco, and that's not true. Actually, even though I know to a landlord who's not receiving any rent, it seems like it takes forever, but actually eviction cases go to the top of the court calendar. And a tenant, if a landlord does it right and gets legal assistance, a tenant who doesn't pay their rent should be out within 3 months max.
How about a tenant or a prospective tenant who is looking for an affordable apartment because they don't make a whole lot of money, and they say, where am I going to find that, Delene?
And I say, well, here's a whole bunch of waiting lists you can get on. Never is never good for you. I mean, it's terrible. It's terribly depressing.
Does that mean that there aren't really any recourses for people to find, say, if they have a family and they need a place that's not a shared apartment with, say, some other single people or something like that? I mean, where can they go to find some sort of a rent in San Francisco that's affordable?
My legal secretary commutes in from Pittsburgh every day. She got Ellis acted, and she got a big buyout, and she bought a little house out in Pittsburgh.
How does she feel about that?
She loves having a little house. She never would have been a homeowner otherwise. And 3 hours of her day for the commute, she's pretty exhausted and grumpy all the time.
How about a landlord who has a tenant who's been in since the 70s, and they know they're getting much, much, much less than market value for that unit? And they say, what can I do about this situation, which has turned into kind of a money pit for me?
You know, we would investigate any of their options for rent increases under our law. But the fact that somebody who's lived there for that long is paying way less than market rent, that does not come as a surprise to us. Rent control protects longstanding tenants from market rents, from inflated market rents. And for that person, there aren't a ton. There's no remedy to bring the rent up to market. If there was, there would be no rent control.
So the mechanisms that they would have to then evict somebody and make a vacant property, I mean, primarily that's the Ellis Act. Is that the only mechanism where they – I think the definition of Ellis Act is essentially the property becomes owner-occupied.
No, it doesn't become owner-occupied necessarily. It just is no longer a residential rental unit. So if you take the – you would have to take all of the units in the building off the market, and you can't rent them for an additional 5 or 10 years, depending on their – it's complicated. But it is – what usually happens is that if you're taking the buildings off the market, some people will say they're doing it because they just don't want to be in the business anymore. But I think that's a minority, to be honest. If you look at the statistics, and people have been doing studies recently – quite a bit of the Ellis activity that's going on are speculators who are buying the properties and turning around and selling them as TICs quite, you know, within the first year, if not the first 10 minutes, basically, because then they can be sold at, you know, it's very lucrative to do that.
And how did that law change recently? Because the condo conversion in San Francisco, that had a change in the law.
There, it used to be that, you know, people could get into the condo lottery, and it was taking a tremendous amount of time. And so there was just a piece of legislation that passed because there was this pent-up demand from TIC owners who thought they were going to be able to condo convert and had been waiting 7, 8 years for some of them. So what they did is they allowed those people, I think it was about 1,500 units, to convert, but with the commensurate kibosh on any future condominium conversions for the next 10 years. So now people who are going to Ellis and have those units as to convert them into TICs, tenancies in common, will not be able to condo convert them for the next 10 years. So we thought that that would drive down the demand. I didn't pass this legislation. I don't pass any legislation, obviously. But you
have to stay aware of it.
I try, but lately it's increasingly difficult, to be honest. They're keeping us quite busy. But in any event, we thought that the demand would be less because those people aren't going to be able to condo convert, but the demands of homeownership seem to have not slacked at all.